Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch number 13. It's May 15th, 2020. And if you hear thunder in the background, it's because there's a whole lot of it going on right now. Last call. Roy Buchanan played the Dillo for the last time on a two-night stand in the spring of 1980, just after Hank and Company learned that the place was being sold. The supremely gifted guitarist was an emotional fellow, and the idea that he'd never play there again, depressed the hell out of him. He'd always wanted to do a live album there, but it had never worked out. He'd always gotten a lot of love from our audiences. After Roy's last show, he and Henry Gonzalez were the last two people in the building. The guitarist pleaded with Henry to go somewhere and party, to do something. Roy just wanted to stay there by himself for a few more hours. The Dillo went out with a bang. Devo and Roy Orbison played separate nights in August, Leon Redbone and Asleep at the Wheel in September, and James Cotton, Frank Zappa, and Doc and Merle Watson in October. Talking Heads played the week before Thanksgiving, Arlo Guthrie on Thanksgiving night, and on the last night of the month, Robert Shaw, the great Austin Barrelhouse pianist, played a farewell boogie-woogie. John Hartford kicked off to the first weekend of December, followed by Rock Pile on Friday and Taj Mahal and Towns Van Zandt on Saturday. The last few weeks saw an abundance of riches, a night with Maria Muldaur and Dan Del Santo, an all-Lubbock show with Joe Ely, Jimmy Dale Gilmore, and Tommy Hancock, and the Supernatural Family Band, a redneck rock triple bill with Jerry Jeff Walker, Gary P. Nunn, and Steve Fromholtz, and a night revisiting the old Dallas-Fort Worth Turnpike with Delbert McClinton from the Fort Worth end and Bug Henderson's from the Big D. With 3 weeks to go, the Armadillo had a full house on a Monday night for the Charlie Daniels Band. Charlie had been a big draw at the Dillo, but he was best known to the music world at large for his recording of the duel with the Devil bluegrass hit, The Devil Went Down to Georgia. During Charlie's set, word spread backstage that John Lennon had been shot. Charlie was informed at some point, but he kept the news to himself and kept the show going. Observant audience members likely noticed several last-second changes in the set list. The set ended with the gospel hymn, How Great Thou Art. The house lights came up, and instead of an encore, Charlie spoke somberly into the microphone. "Y'all sit down," he told the crowd. "We got to go to church here for a minute." After announcing Lennon's death, he called for a moment of silence. New Year's Eve, the last night of the Armadillo World Headquarters, featured Commander Cody and his Lost Planet Airmen, Asleep at the Wheel, and Maria Muldaur. A total of 1,500 tickets were sold at $25 apiece. Austin mime and magician Turk Pipkin started the proceedings, performing one of his most popular mime routines, rolling a joint. For this occasion, Pipkin rolled the biggest virtual joint in the world. After lighting it, taking a giant hit, he passed it around for everyone to virtually inhale. It was even too big for Doug Somm to bogart. Cody's guitar player, Bill Kirchen, was recovering from a broken back. He showed up at the gig wearing a heavy back brace, but by showtime he decided it was too inhibiting. Kirchen's lead playing was as incendiary as ever, but as he launched into his usual onstage antics, people became concerned about him. During one song, he rolled around on the floor, but he couldn't get up, said Jan Beeman. Someone had to lift him. After Cody's set, Ray Benson of Asleep at the Wheel introduced Kenneth Threadgill and the Velvet Cow Pasture. Benson reminded the crowd that long before most of us were here in Austin, and definitely before the Armadillo was even a dream, up on North Lamar, a fellow ran a little beer joint, and we're all real happy he did. Besides that, he sings his ass off, and he's one of the greatest yodelers left in Texas today, for sure. With that, Benson welcomed the man he called the granddaddy of Austin, Texas music. Kenneth lived up to the billing, taking over the microphone. to warble an inspired rendition of Waiting for a Train, his yodel echoing off the walls one last time. National Public Radio beamed the concert nationwide, and Rolling Stone and New York Times reporters were in the room, rocking, taking notes. Jim Franklin was on hand, of course, reminding people of the wisdom of armadillos and the continuity of hippie culture in Austin. After all, he'd become almost as much a local icon as the nine-banded creature he had done so much to popularize through his artwork. Jim also called attention to the wrecking ball he had incorporated into a mural in the beer garden. "This place made me," Cody told a Statesman reporter. "We played a gig here with Waylon Jennings when he still had his hair greased back," he said. "A lot of things changed that night, and I don't think anybody's going to forget it. The spirit of this place will live on. It's too strong to stop." People laughed. People danced. They boogied and they cried. Unexpected things happened. Leah Meckling went back to the kitchen to get something and realized a stranger was following her, talking about how much he'd enjoyed coming to the shows all these years. In the kitchen, the stranger admitted that he was an undercover narcotics agent. "But then he makes clear that he's totally off duty," said Leah. "The staff like to smoke joints in the cold vault. You knew it was time whenever someone threw open the door and yelled, 'Fire in the cold vault.' So we took him in there with us and he smoked a joint with us." The midnight hour came and went, and the 1980s were 4 hours old by the time Ray Benson sang the very last song. Ray did his best tall man croon on "Goodnight Irene," the old ballad that Lead Belly had carried with him on his journey down a road of hard knocks, oppression, and eventually international fame. "I was 7 years old when Lead Belly died in 1949, and the following year, Goodnight Irene topped the charts with cover versions by the Weavers and Frank Sinatra. When I was little, I would change the chorus to 'Goodnight Ione' as a tribute to Aunt Ione, the one I loved to cuddle with the most when I was little. 'Goodnight Ione, goodnight Ione, I'll see you in my dreams.'" And it bears mentioning that the last word of the very last song at the Armadillo headquarters was "dreams." And then Michael Priest got up one last time to bid the crowd goodnight, and at the end of the show, it also marked the end of an era. "This was the headquarters, but y'all were the Armadillos," he said, fighting back tears. "I want you to continue to carry this throughout the country to teach people how to have fun, and we will do this again." Although it had always been hard to get every last person to leave the music hall, on that night it was especially difficult, particularly for people on the staff, who had literally, in some cases for years at a time, lived there. "I left about 5 a.m, Jan Beeman said. "As I was walking out, I saw Michael Priest, Jim Franklin, and two gals out in the parking lot crying in their car." "They were sisters who'd waitressed for a long, long time," Priest said. "Hasta luego." Some of the staff stayed there until the sun came up. Then there were the staff members who had to go back the next day to clean out their desks and tend to other final chores. A representative from the Texas Employment Commission came down to get everyone sorted out for the unemployment benefits. As it turned out, the representative also had a booth at the Christmas Bazaar. You know, I love this story. This is from Eddie's book, The Armadillo World Headquarters. In the very next section, he starts to talk about when he bought Threadgills in 1979, and a bit about Kenneth and the joint. It had had an attic fire, then it had had a more serious fire. When Eddie bought it in 79, I think it had had a hole in the roof for several years. It was in disrepair. I never saw these places. I saw Threadgills, but only after Eddie had seriously remodeled it. I never saw the Armadillo structure at all. Wonderful history, though. And what a mix of touring acts and local acts. And it's awesome hearing Ray Benson, young Ray Benson, paying such tribute to Kenneth Threadgill himself. We had another regulars coffee this morning on Zoom, as is the way these days. Hopefully we'll be back in person sometime soon, before too long. It was an awesome discussion. We had a relatively large group, and we spent a lot of time talking about what's going on in the city and the country. We had somebody on from Sweden too, and it was cool to get that perspective. Talk about how things are playing out in other places. We spent a whole heck of a lot of time talking about business models that are under siege, new business models that are coming along. Clay likes to say that we'll see 10 years of change in 10 months. And that seems true in lots of sectors. And we spent some time also talking about the ideas of two deceased Nobel Prize winning economists, Ronald Coase, in particular, his thoughts on transaction costs, and Eleanor Ostrom and her work on common pool resources. And it was fascinating. And I like to think, you know, a lot of the raging successes now built in this internet era, the last couple of decades, have really capitalized on lowering transaction costs to smooth different kinds of trade and commerce. Uber, Airbnb, Kickstarter, Amazon Web Services, on and on and on and on. Coase would talk about the six sort of areas of search, information, decision-making, negotiation, policing, and enforcement. So you can just picture, I think, instantly how something like Airbnb makes search so easy. You see so many properties. They make everybody use the same template. So from an information standpoint, once you know how to read one listing, you know how to read them all. That's pretty genius. Makes decision-making easier. You have less apples to oranges to deal with. You kind of understand what you're looking at. Even the ability to see it on a map, just all kinds of factors. You can pull the sliders and price ranges and check boxes for features, and just proving all of that. Negotiation is pretty simple. It's very often take it or leave it. There's not a lot of haggling. And then policing enforcement, that when there have been problems between hosts and guests, they step in to make sure that's taken care of. And of course, entire businesses have been built around these ecosystems. And then Eleanor Ostrom is really fascinating. I'll read from both their works probably sometime relatively soon. What I love about her is she did real investigation. She went looking. She pulled tons of studies from all kinds of disciplines, people who'd been looking at common pool resources in their management, to try to bring them together, to try to unify and harmonize that work under a consistent structural framework. She devised her own model for what a commons is and healthy design for managing a commons. And what's beautiful too is that she didn't fall into false dichotomy where you can imagine one side would say the only way to responsibly manage this natural resource is for a single central authority to have control. Another side will say that will lead to waste and ruin, and therefore you need purely private interests to trade and take care of things. And what she pointed out was actually when you just go look at the world and pay attention to what's really happening, there's much more richness at play. And there's all kinds of different models with all kinds of overlapping jurisdictions that work in the world, are resilient over long periods of time, and do in fact perform well and prove to be responsible stewards of these resource pools. Fascinating stuff. And what's really interesting about it, I think, is if you imagine how many businesses have been built to use the power of the web and this global network in which we're all participating to lower transaction costs. Beautiful. It's fine. It's great. We need a lot more of it. What's coming next, hopefully, is a lot of entrepreneurs recognizing how many things out there within and among all of us are common pool resources, and how could we perhaps come together through various institutions, layers, organizations, forms, and by trading against, amongst each other, by making our contributions, could we be better recognized in common pools? It's important. It's interesting. It's something I want to talk about, and I will get into further in the future. Y'all have a good night. Thanks for being here.